Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy, only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, Money Podcast. I'm your host, Patty Farmer, and I am looking forward to sharing today's industry expert with you. And I am really excited today because we all know that everybody right now is scrambling to upgrade, update all their profiles and all the changes that happen all the time. But today, we're going to talk about the LinkedIn lowdown and really how important your brand messaging really is. So we have an expert today who's going to tell you how to do it and how to do it better. So let me tell you a little bit about her. So Andrea Enright is the founder of The Boot Factor, and she works exclusively with high-end coaches and executives turned consultants to provide a badass LinkedIn presence, prolific thought leadership, a brick through the window elevator pitch, and authentic brand messaging. She's been an entrepreneur since 2002 and frequently speaks, dances, and sometimes swears in front of live audiences. Her past includes 20 years of corporate drudgery, content marketing, B-movie acting for the Sci-Fi Channel, and plenty of hitchhiking in dangerous countries. So obviously, no reason not to trust her. But we're going to get the lowdown today, and I'm so excited to hear from her. So Andrea, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much, Patty. It's an honor. I've got my boots on. I'm ready to go.
I love it. I just have to ask this. So how many pairs of boots do you own?
So I'm not about quantity. I'm all about character. I have, I would say, maybe 5 to 6 pairs. And I believe they are all purchased from secondhand and thrift stores. So I love that they have all this juju in them. And they're usually of the, you know, red or flowered variety.
I love that. So I know the other day I was posting about how, you know, we're heading into boot weather. And I have to say, I know you're in Colorado, and every single time I go to Colorado, I go to my favorite boot store, which is Freebird.
Oh, yeah.
And I have bought so many pairs of boots from there because they're kind of already worn in, kind of beat up like you've had them forever, you know? And so I love that. And they're multiple colors. And I got to tell you just before I get started, just because I have to share that. But one time I went there, and when I went, they had this like kind of denim blue with bronzy colored, and they're all different.
Yeah.
And I literally made them open 9 boxes of the same shoes so I could pick the right and the left that I wanted to have. They were really good sports. I think I spent about $500 in that store, so they weren't complaining too much. But the reality really was that boot store is my favorite. So I'm all about boots, so I love the Boot Factor. So I know that's not kind of always what it is, but I really do love it. So let's start with that. So cool. The Boot Factor. So how did you get that name? And I know there's a story because we always have a story, right? So it's about the story. So what's the story of the Boot Factor, and how does that really translate into how you actually do your business?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. So I feel like... So I've been an unconditional entrepreneur. So I've been on my own for about 20 years, along with some corporate drudgery, you know, sprinkled through there. But I was Andrea Enright Inc. for so long and loved that. I liked just being my name, you know, it was easy for people to remember. And then I feel like I had an aha moment, you know, about maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago, right when my daughter was born, that, you know, I want to be myself, unapologetically myself. And I think before I'd always liked cowgirl boots, but you know, I'm not a cowgirl. I don't ride horses. I don't care about horses. I don't step in crap. I'm not out on the ranch. And so I thought, well, I can't like them, right? But I think there was this embracing of people are complex. Humans have so many different sides to them. And so I said, you know what? I started wearing boots a lot, and I liked that expression of my personality. I liked expressing myself and being unapologetically Andrea. And so that's where I got into the name. And the way that this connects to my brand is that I realize that the boot factor, to me, how I define that, is the degree to which you are authentically connecting with the people in your world, right? And so that's what I help people do, is be brave and truly be themselves with their audience. And the more we can create that intimacy factor, I believe Tina Dietz talked about this, the more we can create that intimacy, the better the connection gets and the better your business gets.
I love that. That was like a great answer, really, because, you know, we all have a story. It's not like we wake up one day and say, oh, this is what I want to do, right? There's always been like a journey. And while we'll talk about that, before we kind of dive into LinkedIn and all the good stuff we're going to talk about, what was the biggest obstacle, blind spot, or roadblock that you actually had to overcome when you were doing that transition?
Which transition? Between my old business and my new business, I guess?
Yeah. We get in our own way. You know, sometimes we actually get in our own way and we got to kind of get over that.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was that I remember being in the kitchen. Literally, when my husband said to me, I always thought I had to do a lot of things, right? Really always say yes, do website content, do personal branding, do marketing, right? Really be everything to everyone. And when I really feel like the day I learned that, like, no, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do this thing I'm so passionate about. And when I got to that point, I thought, This works, right? If I just am so specific, then the audience and my clients are going to come. And that is what happened. And that actually leads to one of my biggest marketing mantras, is when you market to everyone, you market to no one. And so I really believe that.
I'm with you as a marketing person. I totally believe it. And I kind of think that sometimes what happens is people take webinars and they do these things, they get just a little bit of information, and then all of a sudden they're adding on things to what they think they do well. And it's like, stay in your lane, find what it is that you're good at, and be so good at that you don't have to do this and this and this. And that's why, you know, to your point, I do marketing and media, and people say, well, really, Patty, you don't understand branding? I'm like, of course I do. And do I understand, you know, do I understand people with their websites? Can I help people with this? Yes, I just don't want to. Not only that, but you really actually hurt yourself, because those people are usually your best collaborative partners, right? You know, I love working with people who do brands. So when I bring on a client and they're like, oh, wow, we need to kind of work on this brand. Oh, let me send you over to somebody who that is 100% their lane. And pull in an expert on that. And then they'll say, oh, well, Patty, you know, I need a new website, right? We need to do the website. I can walk them through all the strategy and all that kind of stuff, but I don't want to build websites, right? That's not what I do. And so it's like peanut butter and jelly to work with those people. So I really feel like pick the thing that you want to be an authority at and do it better than everybody else, right?
When you do something deeply, you do it well. And I think it really feels good to dive in deep. People, I get a lot of resistance from clients because I coach them on this and say, no, you have to pick something. You have to put that stake in the sand and be that person. That helps you identify and embody your awesomeness. And it also helps people understand what you do and instantly refer you.
Exactly. So when somebody talks about something, you know, yesterday I posted something on Facebook that basically said, if you had $5,000 to invest in your business right now, what would you spend it on? I couldn't believe it. We had over like 60 or so comments, and I loved it because, well, there were a few people that did say marketing, right? But they knew that's what I did, right? But so many of them said, oh, I would spend it on this, and I would spend it on Facebook ads, and I would spend it on this, and I would spend it on that. And literally, it was like 10 o'clock at night, and I was still doing introductions to all those people, to the people I knew that specialized in that, right?
Wow.
And one girl actually wrote to me already and said she's already booked 4 clients from that post I did, you know, because I literally just like, well, good. I know people who do those things, right? And so I was like, oh, you know, when you're ready, because they did say they wanted to do it right now, right, in the post. I said, when you're ready, I could do an intro. Oh, well, I would love an intro. So I love being introduced to people who serve my audience, but in a completely different way, because those are the best people. Because when you refer somebody and they're really good, that actually looks good for you too. You don't, nobody expects you to do everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's the same. And that really defines a good power partner. I just was talking about power partners on LinkedIn, and that, you know, let's be real about power partners. Let's really define two or three that our skills are complementary, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to constantly refer to those people, and you find out exactly what they do, and you can give their elevator speech, and you can really support them. I think power partner has gotten the word power partner has gotten a little bit diluted, because we think, oh, everybody can be our power partner. But to your point, you're a connector, right? You're a true connector, and you've been doing this such a long time that you have resources to give. And so being a power partner, a lot of that is really giving. It's really giving back.
So impressive. I really do. Knowing who someone serves really helps you to know who the best people are for them. But to that point, what I really feel for myself from a power partner point of view, I feel like every time you have a client and they have a problem that you have a solution to, right? Mm-hmm. When you help them with that solution to that problem, it'll illuminate another problem. It will, because nobody only ever has one problem. So for example, if somebody comes to me and says, okay, Patty, now, you know, I help them with this marketing plan. Well, that's great. But now they need a website or whatever those things are, right? It illuminates another problem. So my question to myself is, who are the people who solve a problem that when that illuminates that next problem, I may possibly be that solution? And who do I have that when I have clients and then I solve their problem, you know, it illuminates another problem, who's that solution? Because those are my best power partners, right? You know? Yeah. Yep, and absolutely. So it's the people who come before me and the people who come after me. And sometimes we can do it together, right? Sometimes they really just need to do that first, and that's okay too. Mm-hmm. And so I get really, really clear. Like, I know copywriters for me, right? My clients are like, oh, I need copy. I need this or I need that. So really, brand messaging, well, this is why you and I hit it off right from the beginning, because there's copywriting and then there's copywriting that converts. There's copywriting that really is clear to your brand. But here's something that I feel really strong about, but I'm going to let you talk about it because it's your area of expertise, is I think that people really get confused between brand and branding. You know, they want to get caught up in their colors and their logo and all these things. And it's really about, you know, your voice and what you stand for and what your brand is. And you have to get really clear on your brand and your brand messaging before you need to be worrying about what's my color, my logo, what font do I want to pick, all that kind of stuff. So can you kind of, let's talk a little bit about that and how important that is. So when somebody comes to you and say, let's just say, I'll pick a scenario. So let's say somebody was working in corporate, right? And they decided to leave corporate because they wanted to become, you know, a CEO, consultant, advisor, whatever the case may be. So now, you know, they may have had a voice in the company, but now they have to have their own voice, right? What are some of the very first things you would work with them on to be able to help them to know the things that they need to know right from the beginning? You know, because a lot of times people say, oh, you need to know what corporation you're going to be. You need these foundational pieces. Well, of course, that's a business. We all know we need business stuff, yeah, right? But when you're really talking about brand messaging, which is so, so important, what are some of the first things you're going to be working on and getting clear with them and questions you're going to ask them so that you can deep dive into that before it goes any further than that?
Right. So what I would do in that situation and what I do a lot for those people is that you have to first recognize that they are coming from a corporation where they've been riding the coattails of a big company for a long time. They've had a marketing department. They haven't worried about their online presence. And they often, you know, do okay as a consultant for 2 to 3 years when they're using those clients and they're like, oh, I don't need an online presence. Everybody knows who I am. Then that fades away. And what we do is we take them through what I call this bootkicking brand questionnaire journey, right? So they go through and I ask them a whole bunch of questions. And these questions sometimes make people uncomfortable, right? Because I'm asking them why. Why are they doing this? No, really, why are they doing this? Really, you know, and digging deep into that turns into a little bit of therapy sometimes, because you want to find out, where have you been? Where are you going? What problem can you solve now? You know, who is your audience? No, not women. No, not women entrepreneurs. Who do you really want to work with? what lights you up, what makes you alive, right? And the best way to get to those answers is to think of your brand. And brand is quite a misnomer, I must say. It's very difficult because people do think of it as a logo. And I've almost abandoned it because of that. But I want
brand assets, not your brand.
yeah. And it's what I want to do is reinvent the word brand and say brand is a living thing, right? So just like equity is not a noun, it's a verb these days, right? And democracy is not, you know, a state, it's an act. And one of my friends said, she's like, party used to be a noun, now it's a verb, right? Like, I partied with her last week, right? All sorts of things become verbs, and I want brand to become a bona fide verb.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, brand is really who you show up as every day. Today, I'm a little part cowgirl, part workout girl, right? Like, tomorrow, I might be someone else, right? Humans are complex, but you do have to decide, who am I going to be? And that brand is always living and changing and twisting, and you can make it whoever you want to be, but you do have to start embodying that. And when you start embodying that, people start noticing.
I think one of the things that I think is really interesting is I know that as a speaker, you know, sometimes when you meet people in person and then, you know, they're going to introduce you and like you've given them an introduction, but they think they know you so well. And then they introduce you to people and stuff, and you're thinking, where in the world did they get that? Like, you know what I mean? And so really, I think it's really, really important to realize that your brand isn't even what you decide it's going to be always, right? It's what other people say, feel, and share about you, right?
That's a great point, because really, like, one of the things I talk about is that, you know, people are, regardless of what story you're telling or you're not telling, people are telling themselves a story about you. And you have to realize what that story is. And I think, you know, you mentioned meeting people in person. And that's one of the things I've noticed during COVID is that, you know, some people are really accustomed to speaking live to large groups. I know you do this a lot, Patty. And I also love to be on stage because I feel like my energy transmits, right? And I really am driven by that. And I feel like it's an energizing experience. And now that we can't do that nearly as much in this environment, you have to make sure that your online presence is submitting that energy, right? Is really coming through the screen. And most people don't do that, right? Most people you go online, you might have seen them on stage and they're, you know, wow, you were really left that room, that auditorium with new information and you felt their energy. You go online and you see them, and, you know, it's okay. It's maybe mediocre, but it does not do the same thing.
And I think that one of the things that's really important for people, and this is what I tell my clients, is like, listen, Google is in the information business, right? You know, we are in the transformation business, right? And so because we're in the transformation business, you have to know that if you're speaking to somebody, whether it's virtually or from a stage, you have to make sure that you're just not doing so that they could have just went and read that on Google, right? You know, I could have just looked that up and got that, right? And so I have to tell you that probably the best compliment I've ever gotten and get often, thank goodness, is that when people meet me, they say, you know what, Patty, you're exactly the same, man. When I saw you speak and when I see you on social media and when I meet you in person, you're like exactly the same. And I have to tell you, that means a lot to me. I also work hard at that too. But I mean, it's very, very important to me that when people say that, I don't think I realized it in the beginning, but as time goes on, it's even more important to me now to make sure I got clear, because I remember when I became a speaker or made the decision to become a speaker, I didn't think I could do it because I didn't think I was eloquent enough and I didn't want to wear a soap opera dress, so to speak. And I didn't want to, you know, make 3 points and take a pregnant pause. And that really wasn't me. But once I got clear on my messaging, I really realized that it wasn't about that. It was about speaking in front of people who needed to hear it the way I said it, because it's never about us and it's always about them, right?
So great point on us and them too, is because you have good brand cohesion, right? And that is what we're trying to do. We want someone to go to Facebook, go to LinkedIn, see you in person and get an email from you and feel that same experience every time. And I think you just said something about, it's not about you, it's about them.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And this is really the mistake people make with their storytelling, and it's the mistake people make on LinkedIn. Right. So typically in their story, they're making themselves the hero of the story. And what people want is they want to be the hero of the story, right? You have to make the audience the hero of the story. It's one of the biggest principles of storytelling. People are not doing that. What you do is you get on LinkedIn and I go to someone's profile and I hear them say, I'm not sure how to tell you this, but I'm kind of a big deal, right? I'm really good at this. I'm also really good at this. Here's my list of achievements. Can I tell you about how I did this? And I want to know about them, but they lose me, right? They lose me halfway.
I agree. And not only that, I had somebody on my show once that, you know how like different things that people will say and the way they say it will just kind of stick with you? She said that when you're writing something, whether it is a blog post, something on LinkedIn, that you should go back and read it and count the I's and the U's. And if you have more I's than you have, I was like, what a great exercise, right?
Totally.
I'm a this. People don't care. All they really care about is what's the results I would get if I hired you. Not, you know, I mean, there is some cred there, you know, obviously, and but so little amount, right? Yeah. It's really all about, it's like, okay, if they go to your website or they go there, they already know they need a website or they already know. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be there, right? The question is, are you the right person for me? And so that's why you have to talk to them. So I think that is really, really important. And we live in an I world so much now that is crazy.
Absolutely. You know, people want to know, you know, how special am I? How much do you love me? And who's in charge, right? These are the three things that people want to know. And I think that's straight from Elizabeth Gilbert, actually. And when they're reading through, they're accustomed to seeing marketing being, here are the features, here are the benefits, here's what I do. But what they're aching for is connection. Right? They want intimacy. They want connection. They want you to look them in the eye, take their hand and lead them down the path. Right? And so we want to go from that old model of know, like, and trust to translate, educate, and enchant. Right?
Love it.
And so here's how that works too, is that, like I say, marketing used to be about features and benefits. Now it's about how can I anticipate your struggle and provide you with an experiential solution? So my pillars are, so first we translate, right? We translate whatever you do from your heart, your center, and we're all the center of our own universe, right? We translate it from how you think about it to how your audience thinks about it. And that sometimes can be incredibly different, right? I mean, how you think about what you give is so different from how someone else does it. Just give you an example, you know, a real estate agent is selling houses, right? They're helping people find their place. And their client, the way that they think of them is actually, their client think of them as a peace of mind giver, right? Someone's going to help me feel okay about this massive purchase I'm making, right? And so that is really the translation. So first we have to translate the message. Second, we educate. This is always the case anymore. People expect free education. They expect free value nuggets. They want to come away from any conversation thinking about something new. Right. And remember, 70% of what we learn, maybe it's higher now, is a confirmation of what we already know. So don't worry that your stuff may not be original, right? How we deliver it and how we talk about it is original, and that's what matters.
That's right. You're not trying to reinvent ice cream, you're just trying to make your own flavor.
Right. That's a good one. I haven't heard that enough. Yeah, absolutely. So the educate piece is next, and we always have to do that. And I think This one does get lost a lot because in the LinkedIn profile example, for example, you're just talking about yourself, right? I'm not getting anything new. And that's why we have to take it from a resume to a resource.
Mm.
Part of what I help people do. So, but the third piece is by far the most important, mainly because it's the most often neglected, and that is enchant, right? So people talk a lot about engagement. Engagement is good. Engagement means I'm looking at you and I'm engaged in our conversation, but I can be engaged and not be enchanted. For me, enchanted is where we are looking each other directly in the eye. I'm using the peace fingers here. And we are truly connecting at a partial heart level, right? We are getting intimate and there's some kind of emotional evocation there. And that is what I do by making copy and content and messaging more human. And that's what people just usually fail to do. They're a little afraid, right? They've got this wall up. It's often called their image, right? Between them and the audience. And they're like, well, I have to stand up and be on this soapbox and talk about this. And, you know, I have to sort of really show people only my polished self, right? And nobody wants that. People are not looking for perfection. They want to know that you are pretty much awesome and also have a few flaws, right? And that's when we really enchant.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you know, what's really kind of interesting is it really just happened what you just said yesterday. So I know that I was looking at this summit, right? And trying to decide if I was going to spend, you know, a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's so easy when you travel and go to a live conference, right? Because, you know, you're all totally right there. But when you're doing it and you're also home and your family's here, like, do I want to sit for 3 days at my computer, right? So I have to kind of think of it differently. And I have to tell you, what you just said just made so much sense, because what I did was I looked at all the speakers, the topics that they said they were going to talk about, and then I went and looked them all up at LinkedIn. And I looked them all up at LinkedIn, and right here, out of 21 speakers, there were 9 of them out of 21 that had me at their profile. Like, I read their, they were so interesting. I loved like how that translated for me. And I immediately thought, oh, wow, I really want to get to know them. Immediately I was like, oh, not only do I want to I want to send them a LinkedIn request. It wasn't that. It was literally that I want to connect. So for me, in the world that I live in, relationships are the currency, for me, right? I mean, for everything, you know, and probably the thing I've been quoted for saying more than anything is that the only difference between a contact and a contract is the R, and the R stands for relationships, right? So
I didn't know that part about you. I did some research. I didn't see that.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, I really care about that. And so for me, I felt like literally those 9 people I picked, I was halfway to either taking some type of action, and I hadn't even talked to them, right? You know, automatically I was like, oh, I either already want to introduce you to somebody I know, possibly could be somebody I would hire, already know somebody in my network that needs to know you, like those 9 people. And I love the fact that on this summit, they were going to let me customize my learning experience. So I'm like, oh, good. Those are the 9 that I'm going to commit to doing. And then when I just had to look and say, oh, I could get the recording and the transcripts for X amount of dollars, I was like, oh. So, you know, you weigh what you make your choice at. But I really loved it. And here's what's super interesting. When I connected to them yesterday, when I looked in my LinkedIn this morning, like all 9 of them connected back to me and said, oh, Patty, I'd love to jump on a call and whatever. But I already felt it. So you're right. Because there's times that I look and I say, oh, wow, they may be an expert and they're going to show this, this, and this. And I'm not feeling it. Right? You know, I look at it like,
Exactly. What do you think was the common factor between all those profiles? Was it honesty?
So it's really kind of funny what you were saying that. So what I look for when I want to be around somebody, so as I look for, and this is on my website too, but I look for action takers, decision makers, and rule breakers. I love people who want to do it their own way. They don't feel like, you know, I always like to say, you know, when people say to me, oh, Patty, like, I want out of the box thinking, my thought is, why does there have to be a box? I don't have a box. And so I really like to connect to people who think that way as well, or they have a different perspective that maybe they're saying something. It doesn't have to be controversial, but they say something a little different that it's kind of like stop the scroll, right? They're like, oh, wait, like, oh, that's kind of an interesting kind of thing. And I love people. And so I love to talk to, I mean, back in the day, it used to be called eccentric, but now I just think they're interesting, right? And I'm thinking, oh, I want to know. Like, immediately when I met you, right? Like, well, immediately when I first connected with you, I got that feeling. Once I met you, right, you know, in Colorado when I went, I was like, immediately, it's like, oh, no, Andrew, we literally have to meet in person. It's like, I knew it. And you and I, we sat right across from each other. And that wasn't by accident, right? You know, so that I was like, oh, yeah, like you're my type of person, right? You know, and so we're kind of drawn to that because we already know that if you do your business right, you also hand select your clients, right? You know, I mean, yes, they're seeing if I'm a fit, but I'm picking my clients too. And I know for me, like my, sometimes when I'm talking to them, like the hair on my arm raises or there's like some type of reaction, I'm like, oh, no, I can't wait. Like I already know, right? And I feel like I'm around people too. So the written word, like what you were saying earlier, is we don't always get to see people in person. So how do you translate that through your written word, whether it's on a, you know, whether it's a video, whether, you know, it's on a podcast, however it is, we don't always have the luxury of being across the person and having coffee, right? You know, so I think that it is so important to be able to get that. And I think it's important.
Yeah, it's possible because you just said it. You said you looked at 21 LinkedIn profiles and 9 of them, you felt their energy, right? You're like, oh, I'm in, right? And I do think, you know, what you said, I know we're both mothers, and I remember thinking the day that I realized I gotten all this motherhood advice, you know, right when I had a baby, and so I'm like, oh, do I do it this way or do it this way? And people said, listen to your intuition, and I'm like, I don't hear anything, and there's all this frustration. And I think that the day that I realized, oh, I'm gonna do it the way that works for me, was my day of liberation. And I mean, you know,
I have 6 daughters, I totally get it.
I knew you did, right? I just have 1. You're a pro. And so I think that's true of motherhood. It's true of business. It's true of, you know, what you wear. It's true of your marriage. You know, it's true of everything in life. It's like, I'm going to do this the way that works for me. And when you do, you're liberated, and people pick up on that freedom, right? They pick up on that liberation, and it's attractive because you feel more alive and they see that.
You know, I think it's really funny because I never realized that even when in my personal life, when I'm choosing my friends, it's kind of that way too, because I never realized it. But then about 6 months ago, my best friend, this year we're going to celebrate 40 years of being best friends.
Wow.
And you actually got to meet her too, because she was with me in Colorado. But
thrift store girl.
So one of the things that was important to me is I realized that whenever I talked to her about anything, like in my personal life, like you call your friend up, right? Hey, da 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 da. One of the things that I love about her is that while we have these commonality of why we're friends, right? We're so different in so many ways. But I love that when I call her up and say, hey, you know, this is what happened, blah, 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 that she doesn't give me advice based on what she does. She gives me advice based on what I do. She knows me, right? You know, so the reason why we've been able to be friends is we have all this history, but we love each other enough to know that we're not the same, right? Mm-hmm. We are different. So I think that that happens when you're in business too. You tend to, you know, as I've gotten older, I found that I'd rather have 4 quarters than 100 pennies, right? You know, so I'm very selective of who I really want to. I mean, there was a time where, you know, old school networking used to be, oh, everything happens at a coffee shop. You know, everybody you meet, you know, let's exchange business cards and go have coffee. But after walking out of way too many coffee houses going, there was 90 minutes in my life I'll never get back, right? I realized that there has to be a better way. So when you think about it now, because if you ask people, how do you get your clients? For probably the last, God knows how many years, people say, oh, word of mouth, right? But here's what I'm going to say. Word of mouse is just as important now as word of mouth. So with that said, your profiles, your how you show up socially, virtually, and across all those things, because if they see you showing up here one way, wow, when she's on Facebook, this is what she does. But when she's on LinkedIn, she's, you know, like, you need to realize that, yes, the voice is a little different from platform to platform, but you need to show up as your true authentic self, because that's how people are going to know whether you're the right fit for them, or they, even if it's just that they want to know more. So when you're doing that, let's kind of talk a little bit about LinkedIn, right? You know, so I mean, there's a lot of areas of LinkedIn, you know, and I know I'm in the middle of redoing my LinkedIn profile right now. So I love that we're actually having this, but I mean, it used to be that, you know, your headline was really all about again, the I word, right? I'm a magazine publisher, I'm a podcast host, I'm an international speaker, I'm a marketing and media thing. Uh-huh. Now that really, and that used to partly be because of search, right? That partly was because uh-huh. of search. But now there's a better way. There's a better way. Uh-huh. So kind of give us some of the things that people should be really thinking about now.
Absolutely. So it has really changed, because LinkedIn did start out as more of an executive as well as a job seeker platform. And it's really changed its tune. It has become, it turns out you are 277% more likely to get leads off of LinkedIn than Facebook or any of the other social media platforms. I mean, it is very powerful. And so at the top of the LinkedIn profile, you know, you noticed you have your banner there, right? And they issue this blue banner that has these dots that make you look like an astronomer or a software developer. And that's what you want, right? And what you put there is that is your opportunity. It is your free, in fact, opportunity to visually evoke some emotion with your client, right? So put something there that visually draws me in. Please do not repeat your face. Please do not repeat. Give me a logo. Please don't put a bunch of words up there. All the words are going to be below, right? Give me something that draws me in, that's some kind of a metaphor for you that you love. Now, this can vary, certainly. If you are a speaker or you speak on stage, by the way, I think that's fair. you want a shot of that, no problem. But I don't want to see another headshot of you, right? So that's the first part, is that banner. And then the second part is your headline. And like you said, it used to be what you are, your position. And that shouldn't go away. But the new formula is, who do you help? Who do you really help? Plus, what do you do? Plus, why should I care? Right? So I'm going to say that again. Who you help, what you do, why I should care. And the why I should care part is really the outcome, right? It's like, what are you going to give me? Don't tell me a bunch about the how, because I might care about the how, but I might not. Tell me how this is going to end up for me and how you're going to alleviate my pain, right? So that has to be in your headline. And now you get 220 characters there, which is plenty. I'll tell you a little secret. Your last names, they allow you 40 characters for that last name. Most people's last name is not 40 characters. Patty, yours is what, 6? That means you've got 34 extra characters to put something in your last name. So you put Patty Farmer, you know, Media Maven, right? And then you go into the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your headline. Then as you go down, you're going to get into your about section. And, you know, there's a few different ways to do this, certainly depending on if you're an executive, if you're a consultant, an entrepreneur. But there's a few things I would advise, right? First, we want to talk to the audience. We want to engage in conversation with them. We might want to build them up. You might want to say, you're an amazing change maker. You've got this figured out, but you're still struggling with this. What's your plan, right? Maybe we might want to say, are you doing this? Are you having trouble with this? Right? So we want to talk to them in some kind of conversational way to draw them in. We want to make sure them feel like they're part of the conversation. After that, we go into what I've learned and what's called the State of the Union, right? Or the overarching big TL, the big thought leadership. Like, hey, here's what I've seen. Here's what I've seen in the past. Here's what I've seen is coming. Here's how I can solve the problem now. You don't go into how you solve it. You don't go into why you're amazing. You just say, look, I've been around. Here's my experience, right? And here are my thoughts in the industry. Here are my thoughts on marketing. Here are my thoughts on healthcare, whatever it is that you're an expert in. Right? You want to give them something to think about and let them know that you've been thinking about this a lot and that this is your life's work.
I love that.
Right. And then, you know, a lot of times this is broken up, right? It's not all in one paragraph. No one wants to read a paragraph more than 3 lines. Right. So we want to break this up a bit. You want to lead them down the page. And then if you feel like you can, don't just tell, show, right? Don't tell them, oh, if you're my client, then I'm going to, you know, take you through this and this and this. Give me a couple ideas right now. How can I change my world today at 3 o'clock in the next meeting, right? Give me something to work with, right? And that's what I call the share. That is like, share with me something right now that I'm going to leave your profile and feel like I just got something for free, right? The bottom line is that you're going to get thought leadership out of that. Your audience gets value and they're going to call you anyway, right? Maybe not today, but maybe in 2 weeks, maybe in 2 months, but you've just left a great impression on them and that counts. And then, you know, as you go down, there are multiple ways to combine this. It's like a puzzle. I do something a little different for everyone, but of course we're going to have our soft sell. Then we're going to say, hey, I'm pretty cool. Here's my top 3 accomplishments. I don't want a play by play. I don't want an encyclopedia of your life. I don't want exactly what happened.
Would you say that those 3 things, what you're really looking for, since you let them, you know, like here, you've kind of drawn the map for them, right?
Right.
And they're going there. At that point, they wouldn't even be there if they weren't already liking what they were reading. They'd have already moved on. So at that point, is that really about self-selection? Is that really like those 3 things should be things that they're going to see themselves in some way, that they're going to raise their hand and say, oh, I read all this and now I saw these 3 things that you're really great at. Is that the point?
I think the more the point is that, like, look, I didn't talk about myself for 3/4 of this page. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself, but I didn't start with that. And people notice that, right? I didn't start with me. I didn't say, here's what I'm all about. Here's my sales pitch. Here's go attend my masterclass. We wait, right? We try to turn it into a serve instead of a sell, right?
And oh my gosh, you just said like one of my favorite lines, which is serve, not sell.
So oh, really?
Sell is one of my favorite lines, but for me, like my whole motto of how I do business is lead with contribution and compensation will follow. But it always starts with contribution, because if you give them like what you said, the share, I mean, really honestly, what you want people to think about is, oh my gosh, look how amazing and what value it was. And I didn't even have to pay her. Wonder what I would get if I actually wrote a check, right?
Right? You know, and not being afraid of sharing that and just giving something away, right? Because the bottom line
that's having an abundance mindset instead of a scarcity mindset, right?
The trance of scarcity is something I talk about a lot too. And so really getting to that last bit, by then you're just having a conversation with them, right? You're just like saying, hey, you know, I've been here, I've done this, I'm certified in this. Remember not to repeat. This isn't a resume, right? You can have some highlights, but mix the soft skills with the hard skills, right? I want to know not just that you, what you're certified in and how many years you've been doing this, but I want to know a little bit of why your character's baked into this, right? Why this is your passion, right? I want to know just a little bit about you. So example I used to say was, you know, there's nothing I love more than mining you for your magic, right? And I love to say that, mining people for their magic. But I would say that there's nothing I love more than mining you for your magic, except maybe salsa chips and a margarita. But other than that, you're number one, right? So in this way, I'm like giving them a sense of what I like to do in my happy hour on Friday, but I'm not going overboard, right? I'm not saying, oh, here's all about me. And, you know, here's my little long personal bio. I'm just throwing something in to make me human.
And I think a lot of times when people do connect with you, what I find is I listen to what people say when they looked at my profile and they send me a thing and then they say something about it, right? And I would have to say, hands down, the number one thing that people say when they send me a LinkedIn request is, oh, I love in my headline, it says, because I feel like, oh, this may be what I did, but this is who I am, right? You know? And so it says that I'm a people connector. I got to tell you, hands down, it's the number one thing people will say when they're going to say, oh my gosh, Patty, I love how you know, that you're a people connector. Like people relate to that, right? You know, but it is who I am at my very core, right? And so I find that people mention that, you know, people don't really mention, oh, that you're a podcast host, that you're this, unless of course they want to be on it or whatever. But other than that, they don't. How many people know how many podcast hosts, how many people do you know in marketing? My goodness, right? You know, so really, but people do get that part. And so I find that, you know, it's really kind of like not just a differentiator, but really a differentiator of who you are at the core. That's how people choose who the right fit for them is, right? Which also makes it so that you have clients that you like. You know, for me, I feel like I know that when I work with somebody, I'm investing, you know, I'm 100% all in, and I need them to be 100% all in too.
Yes. So I remember thinking this when you were talking earlier, that I really get to know my clients, and just in the same way that your best friend, you know, gave you advice based on what she knows about you. I feel like I get to know my clients across this brand journey. And by the end, you know, I know the kind of things they would say, the kind of things they would do, how they feel about things. And I can then advise them. And a good person. So an old story of mine, one of my most vulnerable stories was when I was standing up, just a side story, but I was standing up in front of a room full of Ugandan children, right? So my husband and I had been backpacking for 10 months through the Middle East and North Africa. And we had done some really crazy things, very off the cuff, very off the beaten path. And you know, we were living in a hut with a outside shower, a pit latrine bathroom. I had about 120 flea bites on my body, which was no longer a big deal. We were helping with computer lessons at this Ugandan farm in the middle of nowhere. And we somehow got roped into doing some teaching. And so I'm standing there in this barn full of like 65 children. And I was terrified, right? And I'm like, really? This is what's gonna like send me over, right? In the midst of all this crazy stuff we're doing. And my husband said to me, Andrea, just connect. You know how to do that, right? And because he knew me, he knew the right advice to give me, right? And I feel like now with my clients, I know where they're at on that difficult entrepreneur journey of brand messaging that can be really hard to say, gosh, should I really tell people that? Should I really show up this big? Should I really express myself that much? And I feel like when I get to know them, I know how to help them take that final leap, you know?
Now that's pretty special in somebody that you hire. So I have to tell you, that is really important. So I hope everybody like got that, right? You know, so check that right there, because that isn't always so. You know, a lot of times you hire people because of their abilities to do something. But I have to say, I would much rather work with somebody who who gets me. And I actually know for a fact that when I hire somebody, it's all about how we like to learn, right? And I always say, one of the very first questions when I'm going to hire someone, to say, so what does that process look like? I don't need to know the whole process, but here's what I do know, because in my mind, it's a deal breaker for me, right? I don't say that up front, but it is. And what that is, if in order for us to work together, you're going to send me a 25-page questionnaire that you want me to fill out, like that's not going to work for me. Like I just know, because I'll never do it, first of all, right? What I really want for my personality is for somebody to say, can we just get on a call and talk, right? You know, like really honestly, like talk to me, believe me, you can't talk to me without knowing what's important to me. It'll come through. But if I write down, I've been doing what I do for long, and then I would write in marketing talk, right? You know, I mean, like I'm thinking, oh, this is what you want to know. And it really wouldn't be who I really am, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that is really important. So the fact that you can do that, that is truly a gift, Andrea.
Thank you. It feels really good. I do think that is something that differentiates me, is walking people down that journey and giving them the courage. But to your point, they really have to be willing to do that work. Mm-hmm. Like if they're not willing to do a little bit of work in the front end and really get into those conversations and be pushed, gently nudged while I'm holding their hand out of their comfort zone.
Oh yeah, you can ask me all the hard questions you want. And actually, I love it when people push. I actually tell my clients, I love clients that will push back a little too. And I actually ask them up front, one of the questions, and this is that whole rule breaker thing, right? You know, so one of the questions I ask my clients, and don't just ask, in my contract, when they hire me, there's a clause in there that they have to initial that says that they give me permission to call them on their BS. Like, do you or don't you? Like, I want to know. And I have them. And I've never had to say it. Twice I've had to say this. Do you remember that clause? And they'll say, oh, are you calling me out on my BS, right? It just kind of gives them a reality check, right? And I just want to know, do you want me to just kind of ask you questions and help you figure it out on your own, which, you know, you are paying me, or do you just want me to? And I say the same thing to people I hire. You know, if you think that's what I'm doing, I want you to call me out on it. Because if that's not it, I'll know it's not it. I may not know it is it, but I will know it's not it. And if you call me out, I'm like, you know, you're not my therapist, right? I don't want you to like spend months, you know, like if you can see it, then I want you to do it. So I like working with people who are that way. And because I'm that way, I also like working with clients who, you know, are going to be able to just say, you know what, Patty, that just doesn't, you know, like do some pushback. I'm okay with it. Because that's how we get to what it really is. Because believe me, if you're pushing back, there's something there and we need to know what that is, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. And that is, I think at this point in my career, like you, you know, I handpick my clients too, right?
Absolutely.
Get it, someone's willing to do the work, and when you feel like they're going to truly engage. And so that's very important.
I really think that is very important. So man, we really hit some great things about in that LinkedIn profile. So one of the things that I've been delving into in my LinkedIn profile that I'm working on is the new media feature. I mean, it's not like brand new, but sure. New media feature. I really love that because, you know, before I used to just, you know, put my podcast or put things in my magazine or whatever there. But now all of a sudden with that media feature, I can spotlight them. So I don't have to say I'm a this, right? Because they're featured right there. Like they can see it. If that's interest them, you know, a picture paints 1,000 words. You know, that's old school, right? Really. But really the reality is if they see those things there, they don't need to have me beat them over the head to tell them.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to talk a little bit about that and sort of that option and that opportunity for storytelling in LinkedIn.
Yes, let's do it.
So storytelling is become a big buzzword, and you know, it's great and I use it for sure. And it also gets a little overused these days because the bottom line is if your story's not good enough, nobody's listening anyway.
Correct.
Right. So there's one of the first rules of storytelling is just context, right? Are you sitting next to someone on an airplane? Are you standing on a stage? Are you writing them an email? I mean, and each context deserves a different kind of story, right? A different length of story and a different perspective on your story. So storytelling on LinkedIn, I would say is there can be some of that woven into your about. It's got to be pretty short and it's got to get to the point very quickly. Down and dirty, three things you need for a story is amazing visuals. Right? Something that you got to paint a picture for me, even if it's just one picture. I want you to paint a picture for me that I can truly see, right? So I don't want you to say sneakers. I want you to say Adidas. I don't want you to say sky. I want you to say Azure blue, right? I don't want you to say candy. I want you to say Pez. be detailed about that visual. Two, you really have to have stakes, right? There has to be something that matters, something that might, some horrible thing that might happen, some dramatic, you know, you have to have, something has to, there has to be danger, right? Or like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen?
Right, that's why you're telling the story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you really have to have the stakes. And then third, you have to be telling for your audience, right? So I do see some storytelling happening on LinkedIn now that is making the mistake of just not being connected enough to the people who are there, right? We can't go into a stand-up comedy, a moth, and if you're familiar with the moth on stage storytelling, we can't go too far into that without coming back to what we do for a living, right? So there has to be that connection. So those are really the three rules there. Now, what I like even better is incorporating story into your posts. And this is where having a LinkedIn profile is not enough, right? You can have an amazing LinkedIn profile, and if you're not engaging with it, if you're not getting online, looking around, finding things you love and commenting in an authentic way, if you're not reaching out, if you're not personal messaging, you know, rather than just autobotting, using a VA or an automation to just try to get as many contacts as possible. If you're really being authentic, then a story can be woven into your post. And posts have changed quite a bit. I really have seen that posts that do not pitch, that do not sales pitch right away, right, that immediately draw me in with a story or a question, and that end with a question, that are inviting me into the conversation and provide value that can be then related to what you're selling or giving, are the best. And so that's when, and you have room there too, if you space things out, right? We don't want a bunch of paragraphs. We want some one-liners. We want some three-liners. But when you add that, people read, they engage, they comment, and it builds respect. So
not just to add to that, I think one of the other things it does, it is one of the best marketing research of data that I've ever seen. You ask somebody why something, like, I'll give you an example. Like, I probably, one of the greatest data things I ever did was I asked somebody once on LinkedIn, well, not somebody, I had a post that I actually said that what makes you unsubscribe from somebody's email that you know and like? And what makes you? And people had some of the most interesting answers, which literally I took all those answers and created that into a blog post, you know, and stuff, because the reality was the answers that people gave you, that's like great data to know.
It's gold.
Right? You know? Yeah. So, you know, you can ask a really good question, and it kind of sort of, I mean, I'm in marketing. It wasn't exactly what I do, but it really was enough that people really answered. And some of their answers, I mean, some of them were longer. I think one of the funniest things about human nature is if you ask somebody, I have found really on Facebook more than anything, is if you ask somebody a question and you say, and why, a lot of times people won't answer it because in their mind they're like, oh, I don't have time to, you know, tell you why. Mm-hmm. But I have found that if you, it's so funny, it makes me laugh every time. So I'll give you the example. So one time I put this post and it had all the sharks on there, like the picture had all the sharks. And I said, if you could, you know, coach for one day, which one of the sharks would you choose? You know, A, Barbara, B, Mark, you know, whatever. So what was funny is that how many people just said B or C, but there were, you wouldn't believe it, there were more people who actually told me which one and then told me why. If I would have wrote that post and said, tell me which one and why, I don't think I would have got as much engagement, because right out there, they're like, oh, I don't have time. But we can't help but give our opinion.
There's a lesson right there, right? That's huge. And it makes me think of kind of one of my consultants used to say ABT, always be testing, right? And that should just be in your head all the time. Like whatever you're doing, oh, I'm testing this. Did that work? Did that not work? What happened? Learn, move on, right? So this is what we can do on LinkedIn. But redefining things is what I find is interesting, that the redefinition, like putting out a word to say, you know, this isn't working for me anymore. How do you define this? And getting people's answers. This is what happened when I made a post about the word brave, because it was redefined for me recently in the Untamed, the Glennon Doyle book. And I say brave a lot. I say I help people get brave with their brand. But I think brave is typically defined as, oh, it's having fear and doing it anyway, right? That's kind of that's just what I hear the most, just kind of out there in pop culture. But I realized that that's actually not it. That's when I'm talking to my clients, when I'm talking to my daughter, when I'm talking to my friends, being brave is having an inner knowing, right? It's really having this, you can have the fear and do it anyway, but having the fear and doing it anyway doesn't work when you're about to get in a car where someone's been drinking and driving. So I'm like, no, I don't want to tell my daughter, oh, just be scared and do it anyway. No, that's not the right message. The right message is really that instinct, right? It's listening to the inner knowing. And that's something I got out of a LinkedIn post, right? As I put that out there and I got all these different answers that really did.
That's great.
Yeah. This is when you're doing your brand, that's what it's about, is saying something's chipping away at my heart and my soul that I need to express this way. And that's, you know, as I was saying, that's why I help people get to that point.
And that's also being authentic too, and really helps people get to the core of what that is. Cause you're right. Technically that's what people would think it is about being brave. You know, I have to tell you, I have a friend who is a intuitive advisor. And it was so funny, but years ago, I just didn't like that word. Like, I don't know what I thought about it, but it just didn't resonate with me. That word didn't resonate. And she knew it didn't, because she'd say, oh, Patty. And she would use other words because she knew I didn't like that word. And I know that, you know, she would use energy and all this kind of stuff. And that wasn't in my really vocabulary at that time. Now, you know, it's very easy for me to be able to say, wow, we need to shift the energy in this room because this isn't it, right? You know, like whatever. Like I talk like that now, but you know, 10 years ago, that wasn't nothing I would ever say. But through talking with her and getting clear on, sometimes it's a word and it means different things to different people, and don't get caught up on the word, right? I really came to realize for me that my intuition versus intuitive was like a noun, right? Uh-huh. Right? Was not, you know, that's for me. And so I have found that for myself every time. So here's what I'm going to say with all authenticity. I don't always listen. I mean, I'm not going to say I always listen to my intuition, because that would be a lie. What I will tell you though, is every time I haven't, like I get that my intuition tells me not to do it and I don't listen, I always pay for that, right? So I would say that when my intuition tells me not to do something, I listen now. I don't always listen to my intuition when it tells me to do something, I will say, but when it tells me not to, I listen.
I think that's a good rule, because I used to say, listen to the whispers and you won't have to hear the screams, right? And I think I got that from an author at some point. And that really was what it's like for me, because it's just a whisper. Like it doesn't scream. It's actually just like, hey, you should be.
I feel like it's a prompting sometimes.
It is. And I think that's a good rule though, that I usually pay, and I've learned what I'm looking for is all this clarity. Like, don't do this, don't do this. But it's just like, hey, I'm not sure about this. I would prefer my intuition have a louder voice. I would prefer it would be wearing a red dress. Actually, it's just like in the corner. And so I'm learning though to like speak its language, right? And to say, oh, that's the red flag. That's actually the red flag. It's not a whisper. It's the red flag. So don't take on this client. For me, that's usually when it comes, is like, this isn't a match, right?
And I listen now, like, you know, because it's kind of like, you know, sometimes have you ever had where somebody comes to you and wants to hire you, and you kind of just get this feeling that they're not the right fit, but for whatever reason, you don't listen to. And then afterwards, like, man, I should have totally listened to myself. You know, I mean, that doesn't really happen to me too much anymore, but it did in the beginning of my business, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now you really get where you really know who you like to work with. And I'm totally okay if I don't think they're the right fit, saying, you know, I don't really think that we're the right fit for each other. But you know what? You know who I think would be a really good fit now that we've had this conversation? Let me do an introduction to you and I'll send people to other marketing people. I'm okay with that, right? You know, so I think that is really important to recognize that. So I have to tell you this thing about story. So I want to go back to that story thing, because there's something you said there that I really loved in how you did it. But I remember that when I became a speaker, how hard at first it was for me to do story. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I realized that somebody said to me was, the thing you do have to be careful from the stage, mm-hmm, is that if you're telling this story and people are coming along on the journey, you can't leave them hanging there in the muck, right? You know, you have to kind of bring them back out. Otherwise, like, oh, you get off the stage and they're all still stuck down there in the mucky muck, right? You know? And so you really kind of have to know how to kind of bring that closed loop in that story. So how would you say that when you're doing it in brand messaging or say on a LinkedIn profile, what's the different about that versus when you're speaking from the stage?
Right. So when you're speaking from a stage, you have the benefit of pauses. You have the benefit of body language. You have the benefit of even the way that you look and the way that you're carrying yourself as you're walking around. And all of that contributes to the story. You have expressions. And so you can rely much more on that. When you're in a LinkedIn profile, all you have are your words, right? And of course, that banner I was talking about that evokes emotion, which is totally helpful as a precursor, right, to the story. I agree, you really have to be careful about not leaving people hanging. But the point about the, if you're weaving it into a LinkedIn post or your LinkedIn profile, is you have to have laser focus, right? There's no room for side stories, really, to be honest, in a good story on the stage either. But you really have to stay completely focused on that endpoint, right? Nothing to distract me. You just want one thing. And I will tell you that I used to do a lot of blog editing, and I occasionally write blogs for executive coaches now, but here's what would happen every time someone would send me a blog, right? Because they want to tell a story. And I would take their blog and then I would separate it out into four blogs, because what they have there is four blogs, right? Because they're talking about so many different things and they think it's one blog. So whenever you're telling a story, I'm all about editing. I'm like, please edit. No, edit more. No, I want you to go back and edit more, right? Because people are including way too much. I do it too, right? I mean, I do it with my stories and I have to watch myself, because you want to include everything. If you want to be boring, leave nothing out. That's Voltaire. I mean, so... That is classic, right? It's just like,
we talking to somebody who reads the articles that the people who write for my magazine send to me, and before I send them to the editor, and sometimes, like, when I get them back, they're like, oh, wow, this is totally different. And occasionally, people will come back and say, most of the time, they'll say, oh, my gosh, you made my article so much better, right? But every now and then, somebody will say, well, how come you took out this part, you know, and, you know, we have to explain.
Yeah. Yeah, because nobody cares. Like, I mean, you just really have to and unfortunately,
well, it's like, what's the goal? Like, you know, like,
yeah.
What's the goal? Why are you writing the story? Why are you writing that article? It's kind of even like, it isn't any different than when, like, I'm creating funnels. It's like, you know, nobody's going to listen to you on a podcast and buy a $10,000. I mean, like, it cracks me up. Like, what is the goal? And work backwards. What else would they need to know before they get, oh, and what would they need to know before that? And what would they need to have from you for that? And I think when you're, for me, that's how I also choose to do story. Like, why am I telling the story? What do I want them to get out of the story? And then, and then kind of work backwards. And speaking and having to do that really helped me in that. I have to say, in the beginning, I wasn't very good at it.
It takes practice. It's a muscle, right? That you just get better and better at. And you get to know which details people care about and which details people don't care about. Mostly, I would say, there's another principle that when we get deeper into this that I throw in is, like, there has got to be some humility in your story. Like, there's got to be something that didn't work out, right? Some share of a failure, some kind of true humble vulnerability that comes through, because that is what makes you human. Nobody cares about a story that's funny, but ultimately it's like, oh, it was really awesome. I did a great job. Right.
That is so true. Cause I know that when I speak, so say I'm going to speak for an hour, when I put my speech together, I do it for like 45 minutes and everybody's like, really? And I'm like, yes, because I already know that I'm going to connect and I want to be able to pivot when I need to, when I think, you know what, this might be what I was going to say, but they don't know what your speech was going to be. Right. But I really feel like this is what they need. And I want to be able to do that. And I don't want to have packed that time, but then at the end, it's like, oh, well, doesn't make sense because I left out a big chunk that they needed. So I like to be able to do that. And I think that based on what you're saying right now is one time, I don't even know why, like, you know, you can give the same speech like 100 times. It's never going to be the same, kind of like podcasts, right?
Sure.
I remember one time I said, I don't know why in that moment of sharing, I said this, I said something that started with, I was at the top of my game, but I was at the end of my rope. And I was telling that when I was doing this, like, to everybody else, it looked like everything was super, super great. And for me, like, really honestly, I was about ready to say, like, I think I'm done with this, right? Uh-huh. And I said that, and I have to tell you, at the end of that speech, later on that day, people were like, oh my gosh, Patty, when you said that about being at the, like, I was like, wow. Like, you know, It wasn't even part of my speech. It was just what I was feeling at the moment. And then, so like, you never know, right? You know, but it was really the truth, right? You know, and I know that when I hear speakers sometimes, and then they share something personal, right? Whatever, it's the thing that people connect to you. So really there does have to be some humility in there. And also from a business point of view, why wouldn't you want to be? Because ultimately you don't want people to think, like, if they're going to hire you for something, oh yeah, you could do that, but I could never do that because you've had this perfect life and, you know, nothing's ever happened to you. Like, that's the last thing you ever want somebody to think, right?
No, it's just not real. And I really like to think of myself as a mirror, right? Like, people in the audience and people on a virtual Zoom. And by the way, I mean, as both as speakers, we know, you know, it's harder to do it without the audience feedback, right? Like, I'm looking for that energy back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just talking to the screen, right? That is difficult. But I do like to think of myself as a mirror because people are looking for themselves, right? They are looking for some thread of connection there, along with the credibility and expertise you provide. And so that's what we're trying to do, is connect with everyone in the room. We want everyone in the room to feel like we're talking only to them. You know, and we're not doing that. But when you get real and vulnerable, that's really what happens. And I feel like I have that kind of that radar anymore. And you probably do too. I used to say, like, I'm yoga certified and went through a, you know, big yoga training about 10 years ago. And it was like the cheapest therapy, best I could have ever done. I mean, it was cheap therapy. It was just like, basically it like dug in and said, guess what? These are your issues. You should work on them. Right. It was wonderful. And it deepened my yoga practice. But I really came away saying, okay, I would go into a yoga studio to go take a class after that. And you walk in and I would see the yoga teacher, you know, behind the counter taking my name. And I would know right away if that class was going to be good, because I knew if there was a wall up between me and her, that it would be okay, but that there wasn't this intimacy created, right? And sometimes you'd walk in and I would say, oh, there's no wall. We're good. Like, it's going to be great. Because regardless of what yoga moves she taught me, I was looking for that connection, right? And
I think it's so important, so very important right now.
Yeah. When you stay polished, and particularly now people are seeking that, but when you stay polished in your little cage, which I do call a cage, because in essence that's what you're doing. You're just like, oh my gosh, I have to stay here. If I go out of it, someone's gonna see that I'm not perfect. Right. And that is such a just an exhausting place to play. Not that I haven't succumbed to it. For sure. I probably did for the first part of my life. It's like, I got to stay here because if I show people my flaws, they're not going to like me. They're going to judge me. Right. But once you get out of that cage, it's just like, yeah, it's everything.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it is really important. And that's the person that they really want to see. And if you really think that about yourself and you can't accept that, who wants to be working with somebody you're thinking, oh, but what if I say this, or I say that, or I do this, or I can't, you know, she sees, I mean, come on, like, really, honestly, I want somebody to, like, that's really where the magic happens, right?
Right.
It really is, on a personal level and a business level. But the bottom line, for me, my why, I guess, and the thing that matters to me is time freedom. And so I feel like it's all about the lifestyle. You know, that's what I tell my clients. It's where I start. Let's start with, what's the lifestyle you want to live? And then I'll help you build a business that supports that lifestyle. Right, not the other way around, because you can have a business that's super successful, but if it owns you, really, is that why you're in business, right? You know, I got in business to have a lifestyle that I want to have, and everybody's is different. You could just want to not work weekends and go to every kid's soccer game. Somebody could want to take 10 vacations a year, like, whatever it is, but let's get clear on what that lifestyle is first, and then we can build the business that kind of supports that, and we have to know that first. So I think that it is, you know, where you have to get. If that doesn't fit for me, like, you know, it just doesn't work. So
yeah, that's really, I'm embracing more and more of this idea of the lifestyle. And it's taken me a while to get on board. I have to say I was stubborn for a while, but two things I've taken out of that is, okay, what is the highest and best use of my time? I mean, this is more entrepreneur talk, but, you know, and I'm learning that it's sort of a little bit addictive. Like, maybe I'm doing a task and I know that the question I have to ask myself, if I don't like doing that task, then I have to say, how can I make sure this is the last time I do this, right?
Oh, you are speaking my language, and my whole thing is about working my brilliance and hire other people to work in theirs.
Right, but it is tough, because at first I think, no, I want to do everything. That's what I thought 3 years ago even. And then I would say, oh yeah, I don't like doing this as much as I used to. I think I'd like to hand this off. But I also had what one of my mentors, Chuck Blakeman, calls a case of the nobodies, right? Nobody's going to do it like I am going to do it, so I'm not handing it off. Like, and it, that is a, I mean, I'm still holding on, right? I'm holding on looser, but it's tough. You know, it was tough when I hired my first VA, and I'm like, oh my gosh, someone to handle my schedule, releasing control. This is very difficult. And wow, that day changed my life.
But doesn't it, that would be like the freedom then to be able to get up every day and work in your space? You know, I had somebody tell me once that I was struggling with sleeping. Mm-hmm. And literally it came down to one thing. It was so interesting that what it was changed my life. And basically what happened was we realized that what I was doing is how I would end my day every day is I would look at my calendar for what my next day looked like. So what would happen is when I would go to bed, I would be like working in my sleep, right? And so she tasked me to do this one thing. She said, I don't want you to look at your calendar until the next morning when you're having coffee in the morning and then look at your calendar, right? Which was very hard for me. But here's the serendipitous thing that came from that. You know how sometimes you do it for this reason and then something great happens? This was the thing that changed my life. I did get more sleep, but this is the bigger aha thing that worked for me. Is when I did it in the morning and I got up and I'm having coffee and I'd start looking at my calendar, what I noticed is when I was looking at my calendar, I would go, oh, I'd be all excited, or else I'd be like, right? And I got super clear and I just said, you know what? I don't ever want to look at my calendar, do anything that makes me look at my calendar and go, right? I only want to look at my calendar and go, oh. And so it was kind of not even what the exercise was about. It was kind of serendipitous there, but I got super, super clear on that. And I just like said, oh.
So, yeah. So two things on that. One, okay, I totally look at my calendar at night. Like I can't not do it. I don't even know how you like let control, like, released that. But I take what you're saying and taking it in. And I'm definitely willing to try it. I just so need to know what's going to happen, right? I'm very attached to that, but I like it. And then you're also saying in the next morning, you're going through and deciding what you're excited and what you're not excited about. And I think there definitely is this another sort of addiction of these aha moments where I'm like, wow, getting clear on the clients I don't want to take anymore is so much fun, right? Thinking
so much.
It is, right? And I used to say, no, I don't want to say no to that because of X, Y, Z. And, you know, I would say I'm about 75% in where it's like, no, this is what I do. I'm taking these clients. But I still got this lingering 25% where I will say yes to something that's not truly, you know, my, like, it's just not the guts, you know, of what I want to do.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm perfect at it. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes I really want to help somebody and then I kind of let that override.
Yeah.
You know? But I have to tell you, I need visuals. And I was just sharing this with somebody yesterday who literally also happens to have something to do with branding, not brand messaging. And she said, wow, Patty, that's kind of a powerful visual. And I told her that I have this, I actually do it a lot of times when I speak. I have this beautiful table that has four chairs and it's on a beach because I love the beach. And so in my mind, every time, so here's the visual, every time an opportunity comes to the table, right? It has to sit in one of the four chairs. So each chair has a different thing. So one chair is something about speaking. One chair is about my products or service. One is about some type of collaboration or joint venture. And then the fourth chair is about things that feed my soul. I don't care if I make money at that or not. It just feeds my soul and that's why I want to do it. And so I tell myself that when it comes, the thing for me is I was one of those people that used to analyze everything. I mean, I took forever to make a decision. I'd analyze it. And once I got clear on this exercise, as soon now as it comes to the table, it's like, okay, what chair is it sitting in, right? And I tell my clients when I teach it to them, it's like you're trying to sit in too many chairs. Like you can't sit in this chair and the chair on the other side too. Like pick your chair, right? And so if that chair is that it isn't going to make you money, but it does feed your soul and you love it, it's okay. As long as you recognize that that's the chair it is. It's when you try to make that chair be this other chair that you run into problems. So to me, I've gotten super clear about the criteria and how to do it. And it has helped me be so much more decisive.
I love that visual. So, and what that is really helpful. I'd love to dissect it even more because I feel like something I heard just the other day was how can we always be staying in integrity, right? And integrity actually comes from the word integer, which means whole. And I had not realized that. And like, oh, what is it that makes me feel whole? Right? Does one of these this thing you're making a decision on make you feel whole or not? Right? And that's what I'm trying to work in as my litmus test. And this brings us right back to brand messaging, because I kind of can tell, I feel like I'm calling people out sometimes when they're talking about something that it's not coming through, right? It's not coming through as making them feel whole. Right? I'm like, wait, do you really want to do this? And I kind of catch myself subconsciously saying, I don't think I'm hearing that you really want to do this. Or I think I'm hearing there's a flaw here, right? There's a disconnect. Because when you really, you know, when you want to embody something, it comes through in your voice.
Well, because sometimes you think you should, right? You give yourself the shouldas, right?
Oh,
you
know, right?
This year, as I'm going through redoing my website, I gave myself grace and just said, Patty, you publish a magazine. I don't want to blog. I don't care how many times now people are going to tell me, oh, you should blog, you should blog, you should blog. I just realized that I don't like to blog. I don't like to have to do it this third time. I want to say something when I have something to say, not when. So I feel like when that happens, I publish it in my magazine, right? I don't need to have a blog. So I just gave myself grace and to do that. And you know what? Once I did, I felt like this boulder was off my shoulders by doing that. I felt it was so, the minute I said it, it felt so right with me that I absolutely knew that why had I been fighting that decision? It was so the right decision.
So this is a shoulds, right? It's like, and someone just said to me, you know, I won't should on you. Don't should on me.
I have to tell you, Andrea, I could literally talk to you all day long. I think I'd like to have you back on the show again for a second one, but this is really good. And there was a lot of topics that we talked about that I'm like, man, we need to book a call because I really want to continue that conversation one-on-one with us and stuff though. So I have to tell you, I know my audience loved it too. And how can they connect with you so that they can continue the conversation with you? I'm sure.
Yeah, I would love to continue the conversation. So they can find me at www.thebootfactor.com. But I'd love if they went and checked me out on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn. And it's really easy from my website to book a 20-minute LinkedIn lowdown session. No sales pitch, only value exchange. And plus, we'll just have a good time talking about random things anyway. You know, I always like to throw that in because I like connecting with people. But really find out the mistakes that you're making on LinkedIn and why you're not getting noticed. That 20 minutes will do you wonders, right? Just to find out how to restructure your LinkedIn profile to truly harness that energy.
I'm booking mine as soon as we get off the call. So be prepared. I love that. This was great. And I've actually talked to you several times too. So, and met you. So this is the portion of the show right now where I like to call this open mic, although kind of it's been open mic our whole time, but it's kind of my version of social karaoke, where this is the Marketing Media Money Show. So with all of that value that you have given, if you had to really nugget it down to one, what would you say is the number one marketing media money strategy?
Right. Oh, of course I want to give you so much, right? So the marketing media money phrase is be brave with your brand, do it now. And the marketing media money strategy is something I'm gonna throw in here is you really wanna use LinkedIn and use it for good and use it to get more clients, to make more money, to feel authentic in your brand, try a LinkedIn pod. Google LinkedIn pods. This will get you in the habit of posting 2 to 3 times a week. It will put you in a community of like-minded people where you're all commenting on each other's posts. It will create accountability for you on your LinkedIn profile so that you know and you're looking at your LinkedIn profile every week and you're tweaking it. It is a living, breathing thing, remember? And then the final thing that the LinkedIn pod really does is it teaches you how to engage with this tool. And it's free. It doesn't cost. Google it. You'll find one that works for you. It's been a great experience for me. I highly recommend it.
Thank you so much. And Andrea, thank you so much for being here with me today. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot myself. That's one of the things I love about having a podcast, right? But I have to tell you, I think that this really helped me to really know what your zone of genius is even more than I already did. So this has been absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Patty. I loved it. So fun.
Awesome. And for everyone out there, thank you so much for spending time with us. Thank you for joining us on the Marketing Media Money Podcast. And if you enjoyed today's episode, and I'm sure you did, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite listening platform. And make sure you check out the Marketing Media and Money Magazine. You can get right now your free lifetime subscription by going to www.marketingmediamoney.com. Thank you so much. We will see you the next time. Remember, make it a phenomenal day and if your day today isn't so phenomenal, remember, you have the power to change it.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.